maybe I should announce it. Shall I? The memory of a free festival. The children of the summer's end gathered in the dampened grass. We played our songs and felt the London sky resting on our hands. It was Godland.
Hey guys, it's episode 589 of All Time Top 10. All hail the late, great David Bowie. There was never anyone like him, and there never will be. I think David is one of those select few artists that people will be studying 100 years from now, 500 years from now. He really was as much a pioneer as he was a chameleon, and was always quick to jump on the latest musical trends and make them his own. Anyway, coming up next, it is Top 10 David Bowie Albums Part 2. With our fabulous co-host, the Honorable Gabe Scalone. Picks 5 through 1 are coming up, but if you somehow missed part 1, please go back and enjoy it wherever you get your podcasts. All right, thanks so much to all of you who are starting to find your way over to our social media, especially on Threads and Blue Sky as of late, but also Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And we're having lots of fun doing some music polls. You guys are voting for the bonus track of the week and helping us reveal more entries into the mega list, the 1,000 greatest songs we've ever heard, the Pantheon. 3 more entries into the ATTT 1,000 this week. We entered the 600s, we're getting into hip hop mode for sure. At number 700, we had the Beastie Boys with Sabotage. I was asking you guys, what's the all-time best Beastie Boys album? Lots of love for Paul's Boutique, Check Your Head, and Ill Communication. But of course, also License to Ill and Hello Nasty. Ill Communication is the album that Sabotage is on. And we love Sabotage. Our pals on Twitter, at Beastie Boss, says they totally agree with the epicness rating, especially. And that was a 6 out of 5 epicness for Sabotage. Such a great song. At number 699, it is Tupac featuring Dr. Dre with California Love. I was asking you guys, what's the greatest hip-hop song of the 90s? Lots of good suggestions here from you guys. Cream from Wu-Tang, Big Papa, Salt and Peppa with Shoop. Scenario by A Tribe Called Quest, Rosa Parks by Outkast, Missy Elliott, The Rain, Super Duper Fly, Sagat with Funk Dat, Ice Cube, It Was a Good Day, White Cloth Jean, Gone Till November, Still from Dr. Dre, and Nothing But a G Thing, and OPP. But we love California Love from Tupac, the late great Tupac, and at number 698, it is Missy Elliott with Work It, a recent Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Missy Elliott with Work It. I was asking you guys, who's the greatest all-time pioneering woman of hip-hop? Lots of good suggestions here. Salt and Pep, of course. Queen Latifah, MC Light, Moni Love, Debbie Harry, Sylvia Robinson, Sha-Rock, Yo-Yo, Rhapsody, Roxanne, Shantae, Lauryn Hill, Miss Melody from Boogie Down Productions, and more. But we love Missy. We love Missy Elliott and the song Work It. It's so much fun. That song is a riot, I'm telling you. And some friends of ours over on Instagram, Taiko Dad, says definitely Missy Elliott. She is the godmother. And Arnoakin says she is unique. Mark Mason on Facebook says Missy Elliott, people are still copying her. That's right. And we love Work It at number 698. Those songs are now added to the ATTT 1000 and added to the playlist. The playlists that are on Spotify and YouTube. Check them out. They're taking a turn into the world of hip hop this week. And who knows where they'll go from there. I know where they're going to go. But you'll find out soon enough. Anyway, check out this playlist. Thanks, everybody, for interacting with us on social media. Let's get back into our discussion about the great David Bowie with our friend Gabe Scalone. Top 10 David Bowie albums, part 2, coming up next. Roll the tape.
It's 1980 David Bowie from the music video Ashes to Ashes.
Hey, David Bowie.
Did you try out the eye patch?
Yeah. Not so good. Didn't work. I lost my depth perception.
Oh, no. Did you?
I missed my chair.
Oh, God.
Sat down and fell on the floor.
That's terrible.
And then I walked into a door.
Actually, come to think of it, the same thing happened to me when I wore an eye patch. Bowie's bumped into a door.
So have you got any more advice?
No, I don't have any more advice. I've given you all my good advice. Actually, I've totally lost confidence in my ability to help people. I'm useless.
Jermaine actually thinks that maybe you're a figment of my imagination.
I might as well be, Brett. I might as well be.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brett, I have to go.
Where are you going?
I'm going to a party. I'm already 20 minutes late.
Sounds cool. Where's the party?
In space, Brett. In space.
Top 10 David Bowie albums, part 2.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for waiting for us for a week. We're back here with our friend Gabe Scalone. Hey, Gabe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for listening. We're back with part 2 of Top 10 David Bowie Albums. We're getting deep and deeper and deeper into the legend that is the late, great David Bowie. Once again, if you missed part 1, go back and listen to that and find on the show notes, find the link to Top 10 David Bowie Songs from 2014 with our good friend Gabe Scalone.
I'd appreciate that. It's a good show.
Our foremost authority on Mr. Bowie is Gabe Scalone. So says I.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
Anyway. Let's get back into the list. Let's do number 5. This is one of mine. And I'd like to give a special ATTT thumbs up and shout out to the Altadena Public Library, a place where I worked part-time for 3.5 years until very recently. I still like stopping by there and saying hi to everybody and checking out something while I'm there. A few weeks ago, I was there looking for a Bowie book to help me in my research. And I came across an amazing Bowie graphic novel that I would highly recommend to everybody. It's by Michael and Laura Allred with Steve Horton and has a foreword by Neil Gaiman. And it's called Bowie, Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Daydreams.
That works.
You got to see it. The artwork is phenomenal. And this book chronicles Bowie's rise to fame. And one part that I found fascinating was Bowie's sudden development of a debilitating fear of flying. I didn't know about this.
Oh, he didn't like heights.
Yeah, he's on an airplane and he freaks out. In the graphic novel, they depict it looking like the William Shatner scene from The Twilight Zone.
Cocaine head. Was cocaine involved in this, maybe?
Sure. Well, I don't know. This was before that, probably. But there was like a gremlin on the wing of the plane, you know, like during a thunderstorm. Anyway,
Yeah, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Yeah, well, this is during the Spiders era, so I don't know if it was coke. Yeah. But the band is still, they're still touring, but Bowie travels by boat after that. He refuses to fly. He travels by boat, and this gives him actually a lot of time to write. And so before the band even begins their U.S. tour to support the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, Bowie has already written a lot of the next album. And the album is called Aladdin Sane. That is going to be number 5.
Nice segue, brother.
Thank you. On this tour, you see all this in the graphic novel, by the way. They audition and hire pianist Mike Garson, whose incredible work first appears on the album Aladdin Sane. The working title was Love Aladdin Vain. That was the working title of the album. But it's so good, in my opinion, because it came after Ziggy. It's the one that came immediately after. And a lot of lesser artists wouldn't be able to handle following up something like that. And I feel like they did. You know, this is still the Spiders from Mars. It's still Mick Ronson. And Mike Garson is adding just these insane piano flourishes all throughout the record. And it's a riot. It rocks harder and goes off in weird directions. I love Drive-In Saturday. That was a song that Bowie wrote for Mott the Hoople. It was supposed to be a follow-up to All the Young Dudes, but they turned it down.
They really shot themselves in the foot.
Well, you know, in the novel, they say that it was their management that told Bowie that they didn't want it, and actually wasn't true. Ian Hunter found out later. Like, he said, "Oh, we would have loved to record Drive-In Saturday." Their management screwed them on it. I don't know. But Bowie's version of that is great.
Fire that man.
Gene Genie is a hard rocker. That was actually the lead single from Aladdin Sane. And I love their cover of Let's Spend the Night Together, which was a precursor to their next album, which was Pinups, the covers album. And yeah, man, it's great. I want to play a song called Time from Aladdin Sane, which is kind of it's pretty wild and it sums up the album nicely. Bonus shout out to producer Ken Scott, who co-produced Hunky Dory, Ziggy Stardust, Aladdin Sane, and Pinups. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah. So let's hear Time from Aladdin Sane, coming in at number 5. And this one goes out to Dan, Corey, Ian, Gary, Steve, Rick, and Chris, and Gabe.
Oh.
I threw you in there just for fun. You like Aladdin Sane, right?
I do.
Cool. Let's listen, and it's number 5.
Number 5, Aladdin Sane.
Time, he's waiting in the wings. He speaks of senseless things. His script is you and me, boy. Time, he flexes like a whore, falls wanking to the floor. His trick is you and me, boy. Time, in Quaaludes. To other friends of mine, take your time. The sniper in the brain, regurgitating drains.
victim. You just scream with boredom. You are not evicting time.
How great is that?
That's a really good song.
It's insane. It really is.
Aladdin-sane?
Aladdin-sane. I mean, that's a really experimental album. Like, it really goes all over the place, but it still has the, like, the punch of the Spiders, you know? Getting back to the graphic novel for a moment, they depict a scene where the Spiders are on tour, the tour bus somewhere in America, and I'm not sure if this really happened, but apparently it did. According to the book, anyway. Drummer Mick Woodmansey was admiring a picture of a Lamborghini in a magazine, and he had this exchange with Mike Garson, the piano player. "Yeah, Lamborghini, I'd love one of those." "Why don't you buy one then? You've been with Bowie for years now." "Bloody hell, how much do you think I make?" Whispering. "How much do you make?" Whispering. "Gah, that's three times what I make." Turns out Mike Garson is union. He's a union musician. Mm-hmm. And demanded an amount well above everybody else's. And this leads to the entire band announcing that they're going to be quitting after the tour. It's unclear. Actually were going to follow through on this, because Bowie, like, on stage just announced that.
Just fired them all.
Yeah, he just announced that, you know, this is the last show, you know, Ziggy will ever do, and went in a completely different direction after that. But, he was getting paid three times as much. They didn't like that.
You know, the funny thing about that show is he said it, like, before the encore.
Yeah.
So, can you imagine, like, the rest of the band's, like, we're playing the encore, like, what did he say?
Did he
you
just know, say this is our last show?
Are we out of chop? Did he fire us?
By the way,
keep playing.
Shout out to our friend Steve Deutsch, who's a pal of the pod. He was at that show, the final Bowie show.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah, like he's in the film. Like, if you see the film, you can see him, like, out on the street and stuff. But you can't. Could you imagine being there? Like, how are you going to ever top that, you know?
Nope, you can't.
Amazing. So that is from Aladdin Sane. Let's go to number four. What do you got?
All right, my next choice is Hunky Dory.
Oh.
And I think Hunky Dory... What?
Damn, you stole one from me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, I was to be expected. I was thinking you'd have it ranked higher than four, but, you know, that's fine.
Well, technically, it's like my number two, you know.
Understood.
Hunky Dory, it might be my favorite Bowie album. I think it's like there's this fresh purity to this album.
Yeah,
he's like the star before he's the superstar. This is before Ziggy, this is before Aladdin, this is before Jack, you know, this is before the Duke, And look, not taking anything away from, you know, post Ziggy Bowie, mind you, but you know, as he moved through this album, it always kind of gave me a feeling of like wonder and anticipation with maybe just a bit of fear. It's like Bowie already knows what he's gonna become, but he's unsure if he's ready for it. And you know, you would think, what, Bowie, you know, super confident. And I want you to look up, you can find it on YouTube, and it's famous. It's a promotional video that a guy named Mick Rock did in July of 73. He was a London photographer, and it's that video with
Life
him
on Mars.
Yes, exactly. In the turquoise suit against the white background. And watch that video. And if you look close, you can really see the conflict in his eyes. I mean, you can see him strutting with some confidence and some head bobs. But then some of the shots, you know, even like the wide shots, you see there's just a little bit of, I don't know, a little bit of trepidation in there.
He thinks and, it may be kind of over feel, his head, maybe.
Well, it's possibly, considering, you know, when he did that, it was 73. So he had two albums, you know, slamming together, you know, on the charts. Matter of fact, Hunky Dory ended up, you know, it didn't sell well initially. But then when Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, you know, blew up, then so did Hunky Dory. And Hunky Dory ended up reaching higher on the charts than Ziggy did.
Hmm.
And so, you know, give it a listen and see if you, you know, kind of pick up what I pick up. And it's always kind of interested me how Bowie songs, they never overtly dive into the personal, because it's usually the lyrics, you know, the music's the most important thing. But even though they don't delve into the personal, they evoke such an emotional response, you know, and at least to me, like a personal emotional response. It's, you know, it was kind of fascinated me. Master craftsman he is.
Yeah. Well, this is when he started writing on piano quite a bit, you know, and you hear it Changes is the first song, and it's a whole new style for him. And it's more sophisticated than The Man Who Sold the World. Like it's, you know, it's more expansive. It has all kinds of different, directions it goes in. This is really funny. I read this with doing my research. The first song that Bowie wrote for Hunky Dory was "Oh, You Pretty Things." And
what's I know where you're going with this.
He played it for his friend Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits. And Noon decided to record his own version and release it as his debut single from his first solo album. And I'm just trying to imagine like what people thought of the guy who sang "Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter" and all that stuff. He sings, "Look out at your children, see their faces in golden rays. Don't kid yourself, they belong to you. They're the start of the coming race. The earth is a bitch, we finished our news. Homo sapiens have outgrown their use. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay." That's the guy who's saying, something tells me I'm into something good, singing those lyrics. That's just hilarious to me.
Just a quick aside, when you think of that song,
yeah,
"Something Tells Me I'm Into Something Good," being that we're about the same age, what pops in your mind right away?
Oh, the Naked Gun, of course.
Naked Gun. Yep, exactly. Sorry, I didn't mean to tangent there.
No, it's great.
Actually, I have a quote from Noon, and that song actually went to number 12. It was a hit for him. He said to NME, "Is there only like one music? It's like Rolling Stone and NME. I think that's it. There's no other music albums out there."
Nope, nothing else.
But he told NME, quote, "My view is that David Bowie is the best writer in Britain at the moment, certainly the best since Lennon and McCarthy."
McCarthy.
And that's high praise from the chief hermit, man, let me tell you.
By the way, you said McCarthy.
Oh, let me do that again. I'm sorry.
No. I'm not letting you do it again. We're leaving it in. Anyway.
I said McCarthy.
Lennon McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy.
Well, you know, because actually, you don't want to put Lennon and McCarthy together because, you know, communist.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they would, that would cause mutual destruction.
Yeah, that would not go well. They would definitely break up.
So, what are we going to hear from Hunky Dory? I had Queen Bitch lined up just because it has never been played on the show before, which is insane.
That's interesting. It's a song about Lou Reed.
Yeah, it's funny. There's three tribute songs on that record. There's Andy Warhol and a song for Bob Dylan and Lou Reed.
Yeah, this comes from when the label had him do a radio tour of America.
Yeah.
Before he came back and started writing these songs.
His eyes opened wide by being
and
in America.
Wrote these three songs for these three American icons.
Yeah. By the way,
we're going to play. Oh, go ahead.
What are we going to play?
Oh, I was going to say. Even though it's been on the show before, it's my favorite Bowie song, so I'm going to play, or you're going to play, Life on Mars.
No, you can't. I can't argue with that. Nah. Shout out to our friends Dan, Marcel, Corey, Ian, Gary, Miranda, Barry, Rick, Adam, and Steve. They say, play something from Hunky Dory, and that's just what we're going to do right now. It's number four.
Number four, Hunky Dory.
It's a god-awful small affair. To the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those gay men go. It's a freaky show. Take a look. Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing for, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, and I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show.
So that is Life on Mars from the amazing Hunky Dory, coming in at number four. It's funny, in that graphic novel they show the part where they're recording that. That's Rick Wakeman on the piano there.
Yes, it is.
And they're like wrapping up like a perfect take, and then they say, "Oh bloody hell, the phone's ringing in the bathroom." Like, and you can hear it on the recording. They're like, "Leave it in, it's great," you know, because you can actually hear the phone ringing right at the very end of Life on Mars.
Rick, I told you to mute your phone.
No, it's not that kind of phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Hunky Dory. You stole that one from me. Thank you very much. So it's alternate.
You're welcome very much.
It's alternate time. And I got to say, one, that really struck me because I never listened to it, or I just listened to the couple of singles they had put out after Bowie had died. It took me a while to listen to Black Star. Like, I guess I just listened to it for the first time, the whole album. And it's absolutely incredible. That was his final album, 2016. And that's what we'll do for number three. We'll do Black Star. And I didn't prepare any notes for it because it wasn't on my list. But I will just kind of say a few things that I can find on Wikipedia here. Black Star is the 26th and final studio album by English musician David Bowie. January 2016, January 8th, coinciding with his 69th birthday, and co-produced by Tony Visconti. There you go. And Bowie hired in New York City, group of local jazz musicians. Saxophonist Donnie McCaslin, pianist Jason Lindner, bassist Tim LaFever, and drummer Mike Giuliana, guitarist Ben Maunder joined the ensemble for the final sessions, and James Murphy of LCD Sound System contributed percussion. And
it's a good choice.
Yeah, not bad. And it's very experimental. It's very dark. It's very art rock, atmospheric stuff. And it's, according to this, David Bowie took inspiration from artists including Kendrick Lamar, D'Angelo, Death Grips, and Boards of Canada, listening to them during the album's production. Cannot believe it's the greatest tragedy in rock history. 2 days after the album came out, Bowie died of liver cancer.
Yeah, you could tell he was just keeping himself alive, finishing this.
But nobody knew he was sick. You know, he kept that from everybody. And Tony Visconti described Black Star as Bowie's intended swan song and a parting gift for his fans before his death. Upon release, it was, you know, critically, everyone went crazy. You know, it was, you know, the top of everyone's top 10 list of albums of the year. It won Grammy, won Best Alternative Music Album, Best Engineered Album, Non-Classical, and Best Recording Package at the Grammys. And yeah, it's pretty great. It took me, like I said, it took me a while to work up the nerve to listen to it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you know, you may like it, you may not, but it's all we have left. So it's like, you know, you have to respect it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I like some of these quotes from critics. David Frick from Rolling Stone, he says, Black Star's ricochet of textural eccentricity and pictorial shrapnel writing. Andy Gill of The Independent regarded the record as, quote, the most extreme album of Bowie's entire career, stating that Black Star is as far as he's strayed from pop. So it's a hell of a way to go out.
Yeah, and I agree.
I'm going to play the title track. This is Black Star from Black Star. Thanks so much to Corey, Roy, Pat, Steve, Rick, Peter, Adam, and Bill. They say, please play something from Black Star. I don't know if they said please, but we're gonna honor that anyway.
I'm sure they meant please.
Oh yeah. Stupid. It's number three.
Number three, Black Star.
Candle. the center of it all.
Something happened on the day he died. Spirit rose a meter and stepped aside. Somebody else took his place and bravely cried.
I'm a black stone, I'm a black stone.
How many times does an angel fall? How many people lie instead of talking tall? He trod the sacred ground, he cried loud into the crowd.
There it is, Black Star. It's intense, man. Really intense.
It really is. It really is. It's tough to listen to. I wish I could give it a little more of a critical spin and see it as the album unto itself, but it's like, you know, he died 2 days after it came out. It's like I can't listen to it without getting depressed. I mean, but depressed in the wrong way, not depressed because that's where the music takes me. It's just depressed because this is the last thing he'll ever record. And it just, I don't know. I've listened to albums by other people that have died and had no problem, but there's just something about that, you know, Dark Star. I can't do it. I can't.
Well,
do it,
you're,
man.
You know, you're a super fan and you're an extreme empath. So I understand. So anyway, while we were listening to that, we had a little discussion, And surprise, surprise, we have the same album as number one. I mean, that's...
Yeah, we kind of figured that this is where it was going to go.
And so I have number one. So we're doing the honorable thing and leaving that to me, as we should, especially since you stole my hunky dory.
And it is your show.
And it's my show. So Gabe's got an alternate for number two. What do you have for us?
Okay, so my alternate for number two is Bowie's album before Dark Star, The Next Day.
Next Day. Yeah, a lot of praise for that from our social media friends.
It's a really good album. And so you saw him on tour in 2004, right?
The reality tour, yep.
Now, he had to cut that tour short because he had that emergency angioplasty. And then he, as far as the world knew, retired.
Yeah.
From music and, you know, really public life. And, you know, nobody knew why he did it. I mean, could have been he was, like, facing his mortality. Maybe it was to spend more time with his daughter, Lexi, who was, like, four at the time. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was his crashing Bowie bonds. We were going to talk about some of his other things. Well, this is one of them. And
crashing Bowie bonds.
Yeah, his Bowie bonds. You've heard of this?
No. What is this?
Okay, so Bowie bonds were like a bond. It was a what's called a celebrity bond, and he was one of the first modern artists to do it. And basically, you use the catalog as the, you know, the bond, and then people will, you know, buy into that, and it will go for a certain period, like any bond, it'll mature,
right,
you know, over a certain period of time. And then at this point, you know, he was 2004, the bond was 7 years into a 10-year maturity. And I believe that's right. Yeah. So what happened, as you remember, the rise of file sharing at that point, right, you know, really crippled the music industry. So
bad time.
Bad time. So, of course, yeah, his bonds that had been about middle rated ended up getting downgraded to just above near junk status. And, you know,
lost
that was
a lot
bad
of money.
Now, fortunately for Bowie, but not at this time, as you all remember,
there's a cat sneezing in here, by the way.
There's a cat sneezing. Aw.
There's a cat sneezing. Poor T-Bone. Anyway, go on.
since, you know, the music industry cracked down and then started to do, you know, pay sites and stuff like that to, you know, kind of wrest control back from these file sharing sites, the bonds were able to, you know, bounce back and, you know, they, you know, cashed in without, you know, having any liability.
Oh, that's good.
Also, it's possible that he stepped away because he wanted his public face filtered through his website, davidbowie.com, a website that you could access for free through bowie.net, his own dial-up service provider. I am not kidding. He had his own dial-up for $19.95 a month. You could get internet access through BowieNet.
Wow. Does it come with a cool soundtrack? Like, there's just, like, you log in, and instead of that, you know, annoying AOL thing, whatever, it's like, yeah, you get, like, you know, oh, wham, bam, thank you, man. You know, something like that.
Unfortunately, I didn't know about this, or I totally would have done it. Apparently, at one point, it had over 100,000 clients. If you paid the $19.95 per month, you would be able to access BowieNet, access his website, rather,
what
for free, davidbowie.com. If not, if you had a different URL, you could pay $5.99 and then access David Bowie's subscription website.
What a strange venture. That's so
it is, but, you know, it also may, you know, be the reason some of the albums in the late 90s were maybe a little distracted. But by, you know, 2011, Bowie was, you know, starting to feel the itch. And there were rumors that he was in ill health because they kept asking him to play at the 2012 Olympics. And he kept saying no. And the reason he was saying no was because he was producing an album at the time and he didn't want to blow the surprise.
Right.
And he pulled together a bunch of past collaborators, good old Tony Visconti, Gail Ann Dorsey, Zachary Alford, even got Earl Slick to come in there and throw down a few licks. And the album was completed in secret. He had to get, had everybody sign NDAs in October 2012 and released on January 8th, 2013 on Bowie's 66th birthday, and surprising everybody, surprising the world. I mean, hey, he's a showman. Come on now.
That's great.
And critically, the album was a smash. Andy Gill of The Independent praised it as the best comeback in rock history.
Wow.
And Simon Reynolds of The New York Times called it Bowie's twilight masterpiece. And it buoyed by a virtual marketing campaign and a collection of, you know, really slickly produced videos, the album debuted at number one in the UK and number two in the US. This is after taking a decade off.
Yeah.
I'm amazing how he was able to pull this off. I mean, how do you do this in secret? I did read that one of the studios they had originally booked, somebody recognized somebody, so they had to like quickly leave and go to another one. But, you know, even still, to be able to pull off this surprise, you know, in this, you know, day and age,
and have it be such a critical and commercial success, you know, that's a nice 66th birthday present.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What are we going to hear?
We're going to hear the title track on this one, The Next Day.
The Next Day. All right. Thanks so much to Morris and Gary. They agree with you.
Right on, Morris. Gary.
The Next Day, number two.
I went to high school with Morris.
No, you didn't. He's from Australia.
No, I didn't. He's what?
He's from Australia.
That's when I was overseas.
Oh, okay.
In the Coast Guard. Anyway, go correct it.
In high school. In the Coast Guard. All right, number two.
Number two. The Next Day.
Look into my eyes, it tells how I'm gonna say goodbye. He says, yeah. Loving goodbye, yeah. All the days she thinks of is love, yeah. They're whooping through the streets and alleys there, the corners and the baying crowd right there. They can't get enough of that doomsday song. They can't get enough of it all. Listen. Listen to the horse, he tells her. He fashions paper sculptures of them. Then drags them to the river's bank in the court. Their soggy paper bodies wash ashore in the dark. And the priest defended, now demanding from the girl of his will.
Yeah.
when you listen to this album, it really, you know, it pulls you in. And there are 18 tracks, but they're really sparse and trim. And, you know, there's like, they're lean with no waste. And, you know, even though the album is ostensibly a comment on like the ills of society and social structure, it feels like something more personal, like a need after so many years of tepid reviews and declining sales for Bowie to prove to the world or maybe just himself that he's not grown stale.
Yeah.
And you feel that there's an intensity through this whole thing. It's like the, you know, there's a quote.
It did have a sense of urgency that I felt like Heathen and Reality didn't have. Those were kind of like going through the motions almost. But
yeah, I can't find a quote.
There's good stuff on there, but
the quote was saying like these songs felt like they needed to be sung, and you know, I very much agree with that quote. And it's a fantastic album.
There you go. All right.
Right on.
Good pick. Let's do number one. We're here. We both had the same number one. Shocker. I think everyone else would agree. This one did get the most listener picks. Let's get those out of the way right now before I run out of breath.
Okay, while you do this, I'm going to go to McDonald's and get a cheeseburger. I'm going to eat it there. And then I'll see you in about
3:30 in the morning where you are.
Is it?
I think it is.
Yes, it is. Though my joke totally falls flat.
3:37 a.m. Dan, Marcel, George, Corey, Colleen, Roy, Ian, Gary, Barry, Rick, David, Peter, Terry, Bill, Susan, and Steve say the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, 1972.
How could you not have said Gary, Barry, and Terry?
Gary, Barry.
How could you have not put those three together, Ben?
I don't have time. I don't have time for that.
You failed.
Damn it. Here's what Stephen Thomas Erlewine says. he writes for AllMusic. Here's his quick capsule review. Borrowing heavily from Mark Bolan's glam rock and the future shock of A Clockwork Orange, David Bowie reached back to the heavy rock of The Man Who Sold the World for the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Constructed as a loose concept album about an androgynous alien rock star named Ziggy Stardust, the story falls apart quickly, yet Bowie's fractured, paranoid lyrics are evocative of a decadent, decaying future, and the music echoes an apocalyptic nuclear dread. Fleshing out the off-kilter metallic mix with fatter guitars, genuine pop songs, string sections, keyboards, and a cinematic flourish, Ziggy Stardust is a glitzy array of riffs, hooks, melodrama, and style, and the logical culmination of glam. Mick Ronson plays with a maverick flair that invigorates rockers like Suffragette City, Moon Age Daydream, and Hang On to Yourself, while Lady Stardust, 5 Years, and Rock and Roll Suicide have a grand sense of stage drama previously unheard of in rock and roll. And that self-conscious sense of theater is part of the reason why Ziggy Stardust sounds so foreign. Bowie succeeds not in spite of his pretensions, but because of them. And Ziggy Stardust, similar in structure but alien in performance, is the first time his vision and execution met in such a grand, sweeping fashion. So, yeah, Ziggy Stardust.
How dare he fat shame those guitars?
They're fatty. Fatter. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good. There's no shame.
Nice fat guitars.
Yeah. Yeah. This combines the rock of The Man Who Sold the World and the experimental of Hunky Dory. And it's just like self-assured. Like he's just in the zone.
It is. And the
spider,
trepidation that I saw in, you know, that particular video, even though it was, you know, 73, the trepidation of Hunky Dory, you know, he got over that.
Right.
And, you know, though it may have afflicted him as, you know, he was producing it, once he, you know, fully stepped into the character Ziggy Stardust, And he was off and running and, you know, never looked back. And I think arguably you could put this in the top 10, maybe top 20 albums of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Arguably. Absolutely. There's not one bad song on the album. Just like banger after banger, as they say. And
yeah.
I'm going to end this show with the final song on the album, Rock and Roll Suicide. And just like Queen Bitch, this song has never been played on the pod before.
Really?
Rock and Roll Suicide. Never been played. Is that insane or what?
Actually, I'm shocked. I would have figured all these songs at one point would have proliferated into all-time top 10.
I don't know how it slipped through the cracks, but we're catching it now.
Well, not anymore.
Here it is, number one, everybody.
Number one, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Time takes a cigarette, puts it in your mouth. You pull on your finger, then another finger, then cigarette. The water wall is calling, it lingers, then you forget. Oh, 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 you're a rock and roll suicide. You're too old to lose it, too young to choose it. And the clock waits so patiently on your song. You walk past the cafe, but you don't eat when you've lived too long. Oh, no, 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 you're a rock and roll suicide. Shit breaks the snarling as you stumble across the road. But the day breaks instead, so you hurry home. Don't let the sun blast your shadow. Don't let the milk float, rob your mind. They're so natural, religiously unkind. Oh no, love, you're not alone. You're watching yourself, but you're too unfair.
Still, that's in maybe my top five favorite songs of all time.
Yeah,
no, and that video, that like,
it's striking. I know
that promotional video because they have a really cleaned up 4K version on, you can find on YouTube.
Ooh,
and I've watched that a bunch of times, and it's just, it doesn't get old. You can see so much going on in there.
Well, he's just like endlessly exciting as a performer to watch. Like, he's got the music and the lyrics and the songs and the look. Like, he just had it all, you know?
And it doesn't seem forced. And almost you feel like it should, but it doesn't. It almost seems like it was organic, you know, a natural progression. Even though these were stage personas, it was almost like his life created the persona as opposed to him creating the persona.
Oh, I like
to
that.
Reflect life.
Yeah, the graphic novel kind of takes some liberties with that. Like, it shows Bowie wrestling with Ziggy and like the cosmos, and they're like,
that happened.
I'm taking over you, and you know, I don't need you anymore, and I want to do my own thing now. You still need me, whatever. They're like fighting in the cosmos. That really happened.
Yeah, but wouldn't it have been Aladdin fighting Ziggy? Because, I mean, so many people think that Aladdin is actually Ziggy. Because if you ask somebody, well, like, well, what does Ziggy, like what does Ziggy look cover? Like? And they say, you know, with the lightning bolt, and that's Aladdin. You know, Ziggy looks differently. He's got the round thing on his head. The same hair, but...
it's the same hair. That's what throws people off. Anyway, that's number one. It's the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Great list, Gabe Scalone. Woo!
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's almost one in the morning where I'm at.
Anyway. Oh, it's almost one in the morning when you're at. Gee, wonder. Oh, it's almost four in the morning where I'm at.
Yeah, but this is when you thrive. This is a good time for Gabe to be active and doing stuff.
Well, I am. Admittedly, I am a decidedly a night owl type. So.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks so much, man. This has been great. I know that.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Appreciate coming in.
Yes, I know there are honorable mentions afoot. And we'll get to those in just a moment. But right now it is time for the bonus track of the week for Top 10 David Bowie Albums Part 2. Here's another song from an album voted on by our friends over there on social media. Check it out.
As chosen by our listeners on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, here's the bonus track of the week.
Hey everybody, it's time for the Listener Pick Bonus Track of the Week, selected by our friends on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads. Alright, this has been Top 10 David Bowie Albums Part 2. Thank you so much to the great Gabe Scalone for coming through for us. I think it was about 5 in the morning his time, maybe 4 in the morning his time by the time we wrapped this thing up. But, you know, that's when Gabe... That's Gabe's time anyway. I'm a night owl, but not like that. Anyway, we have one more track for you guys. Thanks, Gabe. We have one more track for you guys, one more album to highlight. These are the albums that you guys were voting on over there on social media. We had Earthling, we had Lodger, and then we had a tie between Space Oddity, or actually it's just called David Bowie. It's his second album, self-titled. And Let's Dance from 1983. And based on personal preference, I'm going to go with Let's Dance. I'm going to break the tie. I love Space Oddity, the song. The album is a work in progress. He was still finding his voice. But Let's Dance is a completely different animal. Produced, of course, by the great Nile Rodgers. This was his most successful album of his career. In fact, it hit number one in Australia, Canada, Denmark, Holland, Finland, France, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden, the UK, and number 4 in the US. Big hits, of course, the title track, Modern Love, China Girl. This is just, you know, Bowie's big commercial breakout, and he deserved it, you know? This is, what album is this? This is his 15th studio album from 1983. And one thing that's great about it is the collaborations are once again out of sight. You know, Giorgio Moroder had a hand in the song we're going to hear, which is Cat People Putting Out Fire. And throughout the album, you hear the great Stevie Ray Vaughan, previously relatively unknown Stevie Ray Vaughan, playing lead guitar on this record. And I think it's a great achievement. I love it. We're going to hear something from him. Let's Dance. Let's do Cat People Putting Out Fire. And this is the album version from the album Let's Dance. Thank you so much to Corey, Miranda, Barry, David, Bill, and Steve. They want to hear something from Let's Dance. And let's do it. It is the bonus track of the week for part 2. Check it out.
Listener Pick.
Yeah.
The bonus track of the week for part two. Thanks so much to everyone who made picks and everybody that voted. All right, Gabe, you have honorable mentions.
You know, we covered just about everything, but one album I do want to bring up, and it's was supposed to be a soundtrack, but the album The Buddha of Suburbia is exquisite. It's nobody's hardly anybody's ever heard of it.
I know. I like that. But, that came up in my listening. I was like, "What the hell is the Buddha of Suburbia?" I've never heard of this.
It's it was supposed to be a soundtrack for a movie. The movie fell apart, but the soundtrack didn't, and it didn't get much play. No, hardly anybody knows about it. Even Bowie fans. You know, I knew of it. I didn't know it well, but having listened to it, I was like, "Holy cow! This is a really sublime album." I recommend everybody give it a listen.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. I was like thrown for a loop when I saw that. I have a few. I definitely want to mention Let's Dance. Shout out to Nile Rodgers.
I'm sorry.
Shout out to Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards of Chic. We're all over that one. And yep. Stevie
Ray. And you can hear it.
Yep, and Stevie Ray Vaughan too. It's pretty great. I love Modern Love and Putting Out Fire, Cat People. I love the title track. It's great. It's that's the first Bowie that I ever heard growing up. Modern Love, Let's Dance, China Girl. Those three songs. First Bowie I ever heard. So I've got a special place for that. I did mention Earthling earlier. Love that record from 1997. There's also Diamond Dogs. I thought you were going to pick Diamond Dogs for some reason.
You know, it's a really, really, really good album, and I might have even probably should have, but it just didn't quite make it.
I know you're a big fan of that 1984 song. The whole thing is sort of a loose concept album about George Orwell's 1984.
Yes. It was, and it's kind of a funny story. He wanted it to be an Orwell thing, but the estate wouldn't let him do it.
Right.
So
I read that.
What he did was, he's like, okay, fine. I'm going to call the tour the 1980 Floor Show. 1980 Floor
right.
Show. And, of course, it wasn't 1980. Hey, way to go, Bowie.
You showed them.
And, it's interesting with, like 1984 specifically, it really sounds like something right out of Shaft. So you can kind of see where maybe he was going, from Diamond Dogs into Young Americans. It just creeped over into an
funk
album.
And
that,
disco, yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And then I had Station to Station and Low as well. Those are my honorable mentions. That's it, man. Thanks so much. Gabe Scalone, everybody. Woo!
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I always love coming on. Anytime you need it, I'm here.
We will probably do it again.
Anytime.
As long as it's not one of the more.
Well.
No, it's all
normally
good.
Normally we wouldn't have been going late. It's all my fault.
No, there were factors. Problems. There were factors.
There were many factors.
Yeah.
No one I'd cares. Say there were max factors.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for that.
Look.
We're not taking that back. I'm leaving it in. Nope.
No, you should leave it in because dad jokes are the highest form of comedy.
Really? I thought puns were.
No, think about this. For somebody to come up and connect two absolutely disparate points at a moment's notice and have it land, that's high comedy, man.
Did it land?
It damn right it landed. It landed hard, man.
Ow.
Yes, sir.
It broke its back when it landed. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you like what you hear, you should definitely subscribe to the show at any place that you might get your podcasts, and find us at the social media spots. And, you know, I barely... Some podcasts, they say it every episode, and I probably should have gotten the habit a long time ago, but I just got lazy. The whole leave a rate and review on the iTunes thing, you know, that's supposed to boost the podcast. When people go to iTunes or the Apple Podcasts store and leave a nice review and a rating, 5 stars, please.
We'd appreciate it.
That's right. Anything else? I think that's it.
I think we got it covered. Great show, Ben.
You
great
show.
Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Everyone, go listen to more David Bowie. You'll be better off for it.
Yes, you will.
Yep. Thanks so much, dude. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, peace out. Peace out.
Bowie Net.